Welcome to Tech Intersect. I'm your host, Tanya Evans, and my life and work exist at the heart of law, business, and technology. Yeah, I've earned a few fancy titles and degrees over the years, but the bottom line is I'm a writer, speaker, teacher, and lifelong learner, and I'm really excited that you've joined me on this journey. So what is Tech Intersect? Well, it's authentic, empowering conversations with really interesting guests who demystify complex topics to prepare you for the future, because your future is now. And it exists where law, business, and tech intersect. Get ready to listen, learn, and leverage. Let's get started. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 106 on March 15th, 2022. In this episode, I chat with Linda Dunia about Super Rare's stunning curated digital art exhibition that brings together 12 artists reflecting on Black experiences and imagination through a variety of mediums, including digital painting, illustration, collage, 3D modeling, and animation. Now, this exhibition is the first of a series of quarterly features by Super Rare in collaboration with Black curators. And the goal of this program is to onboard 5 to 10 new Black artists onto Super Rare's platform every quarter, while shining a spotlight on their work, practice, and stories over the 90-day period. It's the intentionality and allyship for me. I love this, and I'm really excited to share more about it through this inspiring conversation with Linda. Now, before we hop into the ep, please take a moment to follow this podcast and then like, share, and comment so that others who would benefit from the content can find it. Okay? It's time to listen, learn, and leverage. Let's get started. In this episode of Tech Intersect, I'm wicked excited to welcome Linda Dunia to the show. And she is an artist, a curator, a founding team member of Cyberbot, and guest curator at Super Rare with the collection, a beautiful curated collection of Black NFT art with Super Rare. I saw her on Twitter tweeting about all of these amazing things, and I wanted to invite her on the show to talk about it, particularly in the middle of Black History Month. So we'll get into all of that in a moment, but first, Linda, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. So I'm Linda, I'm a Senegalese multidisciplinary artist and designer and now curator, which is sort of something I started doing a few months ago and really enjoy. But I got into the NFT space 9 months ago. Mm-hmm. And it's been a really fun journey of discovering how I could impact the space. I think I came in just to sort of figure out how to commercialize my work.
Absolutely.
And it ended up being sort of so much more.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk, because I think your journey and pathway into this wild, wonderful world of creative NFTs is going to be really, really important for other people to hear. You're obviously very well respected in the space. And we'll talk about the artwork of the amazing artists that you curated for Black Rare, but talk about your origin story to NFT art and any challenges that you experienced, how you, you know, minted your Genesis piece. What was that process like for you?
Yeah, it was actually really funny. So a friend of mine for my birthday a couple of years ago said, hey, it looks like you created a lot of work during the pandemic, a lot more than usual, because I've always been an artist. And I guess my friends knew that about me. And he said, I recently discovered this thing called NFTs, and I think you should totally try it. And I was like, what is that? And then he was like, you should just look it up. I don't know much about it, but I think there's a lot of information online, and you can sort of create your markets if you wanted to. At this point, I had just been creating sort of as a therapy and outlet, like creative outlet, because I was working as a full-time designer. Mm. And you can be creative as a designer, but to the extent the client enjoys that, and then you can't really sort of have too much of your voice come out. Mm. And so, yeah, during the pandemic, I just sort of had this backlog of like paintings and digital paintings and all of the stuff I had been working on. So I started researching it, and it was a couple of weeks of like all-nighters.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the more I discovered, the more questions I had. And there was, at the time, so this was around 2021, early 2021. There were no, like, single source of truth about NFTs or the blockchain. Right. You just had to sort of cobble pieces of information together from different websites and on Twitter. And after that whole period, I wanted to give it a try because it felt like I sort of understood the building blocks of like decentralization and what's appealing about that. And then I saw that, well, there's this or there's a traditional art world. And it's going to be so much harder than sitting on my computer and like sharing my work online with a bunch of random people than to try and like try to convince a gallery to represent me. So I just did it. I sort of minted my Genesis piece, which was like an old piece of work that I had done. That was just sitting on my laptop. I was like, let me try it with this. And then if you kind of scroll through my work online, you'll see that it's sort of, it feels like it's all the same year, but it's work that dates like years and years back. And so it's a full evolution of me as an artist in like a really short period of time, all minted on the blockchain. So that's sort of how I started.
So do you feel like it really opened up opportunities for you to connect with, well, a couple of things, connecting certainly with community to support your work? You're already an established artist, and so you have some sense of community already, but you know, the creative NFT community is a different space entirely. So transitioning to NFTs, was that about certainly connecting with collectors and potentially investors? Some people are just trying to flip it, but there are people who are in it for the love of curation and just the art, right? The artistry of it all, but also the community that comes with it to really support you and get the information out. So was that an easy transition for you, or how did that go for you?
I don't think I had any idea how much community would matter. I just thought, you know, like these are platforms. There doesn't seem to be like too many people doing this at this time. I'm just going to sort of try the technology out, see how it feels. I didn't know how overwhelmingly positive being a part of a community would feel, especially because I feel like as an artist, I was alone. As a designer, I was in groups. As an artist, I was alone in my sort of creative practice. And also, I mean, I'm a Black woman from Senegal, right? For me to sort of break into the traditional art world would be, you know, sometimes I don't blame my parents for like not encouraging me to like pursue the arts, because the path is so difficult, and the number of people who look like me that I can look up to is, it's less, like, you know, I can count them on one hand. And I think it's such a scary world. And I think the community in the NFT space feels so organic in comparison, because all you have to do is just sort of like share a bit of who you are and find people who resonate with that. And sort of it starts very organically with like small conversations, small group chats, and then it balloons into like collectives and DAOs and more formal structures.
And so I imagine that also propels you to want to then create and really amplify the excellence in the space. Because on one hand, the decentralized nature of the technology really opens up markets that, as you said, are previously inaccessible to many artists, but in particular, artists of color, Black artists,
yes,
women artists as well. And then if you add Black and woman, it just, the opportunities really close up. So the idea of allowing or leveraging this technology in order to disintermediate, right, remove the intermediaries or the gatekeepers that are in art, in the same way that, you know, Satoshi Nakamoto back in the day was trying to disrupt and disintermediate finance, it's really, it's open pathways, but still it's almost like the embarrassment of riches to be able to then actually find people and find art. And particularly for those who are just establishing themselves, I imagine that that is one of the many reasons that you were looking for opportunities to curate and amplify other artists in the space because of how important it was to you.
Yeah. And also there's a sort of moment where you realize as a Black artist in the space, if you've been in a, like around long enough, that there's just really no logical explanation for why artists who are as talented as their white counterparts aren't able to sort of rise as fast or have their floors increase at a similar rate.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, I think there's this almost like rose-tinted glasses you wear when you walk into this sort of Web3 and you imagine, well, this is a chance for us to reimagine the way we do things. Why haven't we reimagined all of the ways that we do things? Why are some things the same, right? And I think that's where like unconscious bias and often conscious bias too comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
I think we don't realize how much our taste in art is a legacy of like colonial and imperial structures, like what we believe to be like the image of the artist, the genius artist. It's not people who look like us, right? We have like most people who just give you the reference of Basquiat and then like who else? And then it's like, until recently, we have more, you know, people from our community who are starting to sort of create this resonance in the traditional art world. It's not that they didn't exist before. There has always been Black artists and Black art coming from the diaspora in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't valued the same. And I think to see that in the blockchain made me sad, but also I think there's an opportunity for us to correct tastes and to use the power of curation to say, here are people who are working and who are at the top of their game and who you're not looking at enough.
Right.
And there's no logical explanation as to why. Perhaps it's because no one has stepped up to curate exhibitions with their shows and put it front and center in some of the top platforms. But if I can do that, I will, because it goes beyond just this is beautiful art. It's about reimagining the way we value art from Black artists, be it from the diaspora or Africa.
Absolutely. And I would argue that the value of the cultural contribution of Black people throughout the diaspora is valued. It's not paid for. And there are hundreds of museums around the world filled with stolen cultural artifacts and creativity. When I think of Black culture, really driving culture in many ways. But the issue is this starving artist need not be starving. And the technology allows for at least an opportunity, not only to have increased access to buyers and that direct peer-to-peer access to buyers. You know, obviously we have platforms and we'll talk about Super Rare in a moment. But in addition to that, to actually be paid in an asset that in and of itself, at least in the United States, is treated as a capital asset. So it too, you know, if you're on a platform that's based on Ethereum or any of the platforms as well, mm-hmm. when you're paid in the equivalent of that token has the possibility of increasing in value as well. So it's not like mm-hmm. just getting paid $1,000, but maybe it's like 1,000 worth of ETH that over time, mm-hmm. and this is not legal or financial advice, but over time, if we look at historically, it tends toward an upward trajectory. That's a game changer, because when I think of how to really move the needle on generational wealth, it's not just mm-hmm. about receiving a lot of income in one generation, but actually amassing capital assets that actually work harder than you.
Yeah.
You work less, so they work harder. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, I was discussing this with a friend recently. I feel like as a Senegalese Black woman living in Senegal, the financial instruments available to me are like non-existent.
Mm.
We have maybe two or three companies listed on the stock exchange. So it's so interesting that I get to sort of have my first introduction into investment through art, because I understand art. I feel like I have a taste that allows me to sort of distinguish art that's going to create resonance from art that might not, right? So I can speculate using art. And I think it's interesting that investment has become something accessible to me through the instrument of NFTs. But because I understand sort of how art works, right? So I think it's been incredible to sort of be an artist, but also become a collector over the past months that I've been in the NFT space. And I think I've collected just about as much as I've created in terms of art, because there's a real sort of like joy that comes from just collecting art that you love, but also feeling like you're investing in peers who you think should have a bigger platform. I think there's like an extra sort of an added level of like joy that comes from that. And then the cherry on the cake is the fact that you know that they're going to continue to work hard, and you know they're going to continue to do better. And the NFTs that you have in your collection are going to accrue in value in the future because you believe in their potential. So I think it's just a very accessible way to understand how to invest long term and how to sort of like, you know, hold assets over a long period until they vest later on, which I think are such like elusive concepts if they're so like if they're abstract. But with art, like you can explain it to any artist, I think that they would get it.
Are you tired of feeling lost in the world of trading and investing? Get informed and inspired with the Talking Trading podcast. I'm Louise Bedford, and I'll help you navigate the markets like a pro. Tune in each week and subscribe now at talkingtrading.com.au or on your favourite podcast app, or check out the link in the show notes. Talking Trading, this is how traders excel.
We hope you're enjoying this edition of Tech Intersect. Our conversation will continue in a moment, but first, a word on an exciting opportunity.
If you've tried to figure out crypto, DeFi, and NFTs on your own on YouTube University or Podcast College, and all you have to show for it are a lot of questions, but little if any forward progress, I invite you to visit AdvantageEvans.com to get the answers you've been searching for about how to buy, store, and trade crypto and NFTs, and to access DeFi safely, legally, and confidently. Advantage Evans Academy offers everything from full-service VIP onboarding to prof-guided on-demand and cohort-based courses, as well as an engaging, informative, and supportive membership club, AE Explore Live, for as little as just $1 a day. This club is for you if you want to learn from well-respected crypto education experts, like me, transform your relationship with money, generate wealth in the new digital cash economy, create digital ownership streams that lead to generational wealth, learn to vet, buy, store, trade, earn, and sell cryptocurrencies, engage in DeFi to lend and leverage your crypto, create, buy, and trade creative and collectible NFTs, and network with other crypto-curious enthusiasts in an inclusive environment. You'll gain all of that and more in a wonderful community of like-minded, lifelong learners ready to get in and to win. If that sounds like you, join us. Visit AdvantageEvans.com to get immediate access to the resources you need and deserve. That's AdvantageEvans.com. Let's go and let's grow.
And now, back to the conversation.
Really, really powerful. It's really, really powerful. And it just speaks to the possibilities of the technology for sure. Transitioning to Super Rare, talk to us about how you became aligned with Super Rare and where the idea of amplifying the excellence of voices of the Black experience and imagination in digital art came to be.
So I curated a show last year with Foundation. And I think it was, so we created a world for Cyberbot artists. So this was highlighting sort of artists of African descent on the platform Foundation. And it was very sort of grassroots. Like we just had the idea, we approached Foundation. They were like, we'll give you a world, we'll give you some space to do it. And we did it. And I remember we had 23 artists in the show and almost all of them sold. I think if not all of them. And many of them sold more than one piece. Some of them even sold out, and were able to just sort of get the ball rolling on like traction and getting collectors for their work. And their floors went up significantly from that event. And I thought to myself, like, all it took was like for us to get together and curate a show together. That doesn't seem like inaccessible. This doesn't seem hard to do. And I think a few things became clear is that people, there's demand for Black art. There's always demand for Black culture anywhere, but people might not know where to look for it. And I think the power of like my, just in general, like marginalized communities is to come together and to start to sort of show up as like, you know, one in different spaces. I think we saw the power of that from like very tangible financial returns. And then after that, we sort of kept curating smaller shows and things like that. And I think that's sort of how that was my entry point into curation. Mm-hmm. And I think when Super Rare became interested in doing something for Black History Month, I think one thing they did well is that they actually spoke to community leaders. So they had several meetings with community leaders, and community leaders is a big term. It's just like community representative. I prefer that. Mm. Yeah, it's no crowns. community representatives. And I think they heard that, listen, we have to do something beyond Black History Month. That seems very performative and very, it's nice, but it's not going to solve systemic issues. We have to have more representation of Black art into platforms, like over the long term, and just in general, more intentional DEI initiatives, so that you're not just accepting sort of the homogeneous like group and expected like group, right? You're reaching out and branching out into all these other groups that have a lot to say, especially today, right? Right. Especially today. And so I think they heard, and that's how they came up with the idea to do a quarterly curatorial position. It's a paid position, which I think is also another thing to stress. DEI is not the responsibility of Black artists or Black curators, but if it's going to be, they have to be compensated for it. Mm-hmm. Because it's intellectual property. It's a lot of energy to sort of drive those kinds of initiatives. And so it's a curatorial position, which happens every quarter. So every quarter, a different curator comes in and curates a show. And I think the good thing about it is that instead of doing a show and like promoting artists over a week and then it dies, it's that you're promoting artists over a 90-day period. Mm-hmm. And so every week I'm hosting spaces with two artists at a time who get to have like lengthy conversation about their process, about what inspires their art, about what they aspire to. So people get to know them in depth, right? Mm-hmm. There's threads about these artists. There's a metaverse show where people will experience the work in sort of in VR, and the artist will be available to chat with, etc. So it's very quality engagement over a long period of time. So it starts on Black History Month, but it's supposed to be like a year-round initiative. And not just for 2022, just in general. Something that Super is going to continue doing. And I think from going from a platform that didn't seem so friendly to marginalized identities to doing something so systemically radical, I think I'm, you know, hats off to them for having this idea. I think there's a Black woman who leads People Ops at Super Rare. Her name is Sheila. I think this idea is her brainchild, as well as other members of the team. And I think that's what you get when you have like representation in positions of power as well, right? And I think it's a brilliant idea. And I hope more platforms start to do the same in the near future.
It's a really powerful example of intentional inclusion. Because mm-hmm. the idea that technology is always just agnostic, people will argue with you, you know, and just say, well, the technology is agnostic and it's there and it's for everyone. That's not sufficient. And so mm-hmm. to hear that Super Rare has found a way to ensure that this is not performative, to ensure that this is not just 28 days out of the year, to ensure that this is embedded in the culture of their platform and the ethos and the spirit of their intentionality is really, really exciting. And I hope that their example is one that definitely catches on. Mm-hmm. And that leads me to identifying and talking about some of the artists that have already been highlighted or showcased and what's to come. And I'm also really excited. I don't think I fully appreciated that this was a 90-day, well, a quarterly experience, I should say, that would go mm-hmm. on. And we have these 12 artists. We have from Afroscope, I see Ja up there, Lana and Lauren as well. Talk to and Vintage for sure. Just a lot of really familiar artists that have done an exceptional job in the space of really creating exceptional pieces, but also engaging community as well. So talk to us about some of the artists that you'd like to talk about who are currently be on exhibit right now.
For sure. So there are 12 artists in total. 8 of them were not on Super Rare, and 4 of them have been on Super Rare. So Lana, Moonsun Diamond, Arclight, and myself were already on Super Rare. Mm. And funny enough, Arclight, myself, and Moonsun Diamond actually got on Super Rare for a show called Artex Lagos, which happened a few months back.
Okay.
So we were curated into the platform. Mm. I don't know if any of us actually applied, but I know that people apply. People apply for many many different rounds, and Black artists have, traditionally sent in 3-4 applications, and they might not hear back. And I think this was the case for a lot of the other eight artists, right? Mm-hmm. So these were artists who were clearly selling, clearly finding resonance in the community, and a huge following to back that up. Incredible projects, but they still weren't on Super Rare. Mm. So it felt like it was easy to create this show because I was like, who is everyone? Like, who's the names on everyone's lips and why aren't they on Super Rare?
Right.
And that's just sort of how it happened. And I'm glad that I was allowed to bring in 8 people. That's to me, that's a huge amount to have the sort of ability to sort of to bring in people into the platform. And also the difference it makes in their practice. Super Rare is one of the sort of top platforms in the NFT space, especially when it comes to curation and sort of prestige, right? And so every artist, when they get to Super Rare, they're sort of a step above. You can see it in the work. It's they mint, work of different dimensions in terms of their practice and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it was great to see them just own that moment and just create outstanding work. This collection just is so good. Just so good. One artist in particular, Mercy, they're from South Africa. And I came across their work, maybe 6 months ago in a random space. I heard them speak and I was like, oh, they're interesting. So I checked out their Instagram profile. And I was like, what? Their work is so good. It celebrates the intimacy of Black queer love.
Yes.
And just everyday softness. And it's so beautiful. And it's such a necessary message. I just felt like they didn't have a big enough platform. And from that to sort of 6 months later, having the chance to bring them on Super Rare and give them that platform and just watch them take over the entire platform. So the show, they minted one piece for the show, and then since then, it hasn't even been a few weeks, maybe 3 weeks since then, they've maybe sold 7 pieces or 6 pieces. I can't recall. Every time they mint, it's like somebody's on it, somebody's bidding on the work, right? And it's like, yes, this is why we do this. This is why it makes sense, because these artists work so hard and they're so invested in their practice, and they're doing it when no one is watching, no one is rewarding, and no one is paying for it. And when that sort of the tangible sort of material outcomes finally start to kick in, it just feels like they've been due for a long time. It doesn't feel like they're privileged to be in that position or anything like that. It just feels like, no, they should have been here a long time ago.
Right.
And this, it's about time, right? So that's sort of how it's felt to bring the group together.
That's really, really exciting. I'm excited. And I know my listeners are, just to hear this and to hear the arc of the story and to hear that it also has a future and that the future of creativity includes us.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we're not there, there is no creativity. And that's that on that.
Yeah, no, that's it. I mean, aside from being we're always there, whether we are appropriated or undervalued, we're always there. Someone is always sort of drawing from Black culture to get to the next best thing, whether that's in pop culture or anywhere, right? So I think we just have the chance for the first time to have record, have proof on ledgers of our existence, of our presence, and of the work we did. And in, you know, 500 years from now, when we're in a time capsule going to Mars, I don't know, and aliens start to pry into the blockchain ledgers, we'll be there. We cannot be erased.
We cannot be erased. We're going to leave it on that. So aliens here and abroad. And by abroad, I mean in the universe, because in the metaverse, we're going to be all right. But we're also, we're going to make it here too, because we cannot be erased. So powerful. Linda, it's been a pleasure. I could go on and on. I hope this is certainly the first, but I hope it's not the last. I would love to continue to check in with you on the progress of Black Rare and on your really esteemed projects that you do and your own career. And you are a testament to what's going on in the space, and that the idea that we lift as we climb is in good hands when it's with you. So I appreciate you very much. Please tell folks how they can learn more about you and your work.
Yeah. If you want to learn more about me, Twitter is probably the best place. I will share thoughts and art and random stuff that I like all over the space.
Yes.
And on my website as well, thesandworm.com. Most of my recent work is in there. And yeah, just keep in touch. My DMs are open. If you have any questions about getting into the space as a Black artist, as a Black collector, please, please get in touch. We're a few of us who can help.
Excellent. Well, I know that those DMs work because that's the reason that you're here. And I will see you on crypto/NFT Twitter momentarily.
Amazing.
But it's a pleasure, and I look forward to continuing to nation build with you.
Amazing. Me too. Thank you for an amazing conversation.
Thank you so much, Linda, for your creativity, leadership, and intentionality in amplifying the excellence of Black artists in the NFT space. I want you to know their names. So here are the first artists highlighted in the Black Rare exhibition. Zoe Osborne from Barbados, Canada, Zha from the United States, Moon Sun Diamond from Zimbabwe and Australia, Marissa Noana from Brazil, Mercy from South Africa, David Alabo from Morocco and Ghana, Vintage Mozart from Zimbabwe, Afroscope from Ghana, Linda Dunia from Senegal and Lebanon, Arclight from Nigeria, Lauren Washington from the United States, and Lana Danina from Canada and Benin. And shout out to Super Rare for doing more than that tired, dusty, performative allyship during those 28 days of Black History Month in the United States. Definitely visit the link in the show notes to see the brilliant work in this first Black Rare curated exhibit, and then buy and amplify. And if you don't know how to purchase an NFT, or you simply want to increase your knowledge in a safe and affirming community of like-minded folks, join my monthly membership club, AE Explore Live, for just $99 a quarter or $365 for the year. And if you use the special link in the show notes, you can immediately become an annual member for the quarterly rate of just $99. The link is advantageevans.com/special. That's advantageevans.com/special. Before we sign off, please take a moment to like, comment, and share this episode and this podcast with your networks. Follow me on social media and let me know what topics you'd like to hear more of and who you want to hear from. All right, that's all for this episode. Until next time, continue to shine.
Stay in touch with host Tanya Evans via your favorite social media, on Twitter at @TechIntersect. And on Instagram via the handle TechIntersect. This podcast has been produced by Stephanie Renee for Soul Sanctuary Incorporated.